Disc 3.
Chapter 19. What if someone else is looking for the ring? Susan asked, suddenly nervous. Could David be in danger? Strathmore shook his head.
Nobody else knows the ring exists. That's why I sent David. I wanted to keep it that way. Curious spooks don't usually tail Spanish teachers.
He's a professor, Susan corrected, immediately regretting the clarification. Every now and again, Susan got the feeling David wasn't good enough for the commander, that he thought somehow she could do better than a schoolteacher. Commander, she said, moving on, if you briefed David by car phone this morning, someone could have intercepted the...
One in a million shot, Strathmore interrupted, his tone reassuring. Any eavesdropper had to be in the immediate vicinity and know exactly what to listen for.
He put his hand on her shoulder.
I would never have sent David if I thought it was dangerous. He smiled. Trust me. Any sign of trouble, and I'll send in the pros.
Strathmore's words were punctuated by the sudden sound of someone pounding on the Node 3 glass. Susan and Strathmore turned. SysSec Phil Chartrukian had his face pressed against the pane and was pounding fiercely, straining to see through. Whatever he was excitedly mouthing was not audible through the soundproofed glass. He looked like he'd seen a ghost.
What the hell is Chartrukian doing here? Strathmore growled. He's not on duty today.
Looks like trouble, Susan said. He probably saw the run monitor.
God damn it, the commander hissed. I specifically called the scheduled SysSec last night and told him not to come in.
Susan was not surprised. Canceling a SysSec duty was irregular, but Strathmore undoubtedly had wanted privacy in the dome. The last thing he needed was some paranoid SysSec blowing the lid off Digital Fortress. We better abort translator, Susan said. We can reset the run monitor and tell Phil he was seeing things. Strathmore appeared to consider it, then shook his head.
Not yet. Translator is 15 hours into this attack. I want to run it a full 24, just to be sure.
This made sense to Susan. Digital Fortress was the first ever use of a rotating clear text function. Maybe Tancado had overlooked something. Maybe Translator would break it after 24 hours. Somehow, Susan doubted it.
Translator keeps running, Strathmore resolved. I need to know for sure this algorithm is untouchable.
Chartrukian continued pounding on the pane.
Here goes nothing, Strathmore groaned. Back me up.
The commander took a deep breath and then strode to the sliding glass doors. The pressure plate on the floor activated and the doors hissed open. Chartrukian practically fell into the room.
Commander, sir, I'm sorry to bother you, but the run monitor... I ran a virus probe and...
Phil, Phil, Phil,
the commander gushed pleasantly as he put a reassuring hand on Chartrukian's shoulder.
Slow down. What seems to be the problem?
From the easygoing tone in Strathmore's voice, nobody would ever have guessed his world was falling in around him. He stepped aside and ushered Chartrukian into the sacred walls of Node 3. The SysSec stepped over the threshold hesitantly, like a well-trained dog that knew better. From the puzzled look on Chartrukian's face, it was obvious he'd never seen the inside of this place. Whatever had been the source of his panic was momentarily forgotten. He surveyed the plush interior, the line of private terminals, the couches, the bookshelves, the soft lighting. When his gaze fell on the reigning queen of crypto, Susan Fletcher, he quickly looked away. Susan intimidated the hell out of him. Her mind worked on a different plane. She was unsettlingly beautiful, and his words always seemed to get jumbled around her. Susan's unassuming air made it even worse.
What seems to be the problem, Phil? Strathmore said, opening the refrigerator. Drink?
No, thank you, sir.
He seemed tongue-tied, not sure he was truly welcome.
Sir, I think there's a problem with translator.
Strathmore closed the refrigerator door and looked at Chartrukian casually.
You mean the run monitor?
Chartrukian looked shocked.
You mean you've seen it?
Sure. It's running at about 16 hours, if I'm not mistaken.
Chartrukian seemed puzzled.
Yes, sir, 16 hours. But that's not all, sir. I ran a virus probe, and it's turning up some pretty strange stuff.
Really?
Strathmore seemed unconcerned.
What kind of stuff?
Susan watched, impressed with the commander's performance. Chartroukian stumbled on.
Translators processing something very advanced. The filters have never seen anything like it. I'm afraid Translator may have some sort of virus.
A virus? Strathmore chuckled with just a hint of condescension. Phil, I appreciate your concern, I really do. But Ms. Fletcher and I are running a new diagnostic, some very advanced stuff. I would have alerted you to it, but I wasn't aware you were on duty today.
The SysSec did his best to cover gracefully.
I switched with the new guy. I took his weekend shift.
Strathmore's eyes narrowed.
That's odd. I spoke to him last night. I told him not to come in. He said nothing about switching shifts.
Chartroukian felt a knot rise in his throat. There was a tense silence.
Well, Strathmore finally sighed. Sounds like an unfortunate mix-up.
He put a hand on the SysSec's shoulder and led him toward the door.
The good news is you don't have to stay. Ms. Fletcher and I will be here all day. We'll hold the fort. You just enjoy your weekend.
Chartroukian was hesitant.
Commander, I really think we should check the...
Phil, Strathmore repeated a little more sternly. Translator is fine. If your probe saw something strange, it's because we put it there. Now, if you don't mind...
Strathmore trailed off, and the SysSec understood. His time was up.
A diagnostic, my ass,
Chartroukian muttered as he fumed back into the SysSec lab.
What kind of looping function keeps 3 million processors busy for 16 hours?
Chartroukian wondered if he should call the SysSec supervisor.
Goddamn cryptographers, he thought. They just don't understand security.
The oath Chartroukian had taken when he joined SysSec began running through his head. He had sworn to use his expertise, training, and instinct to protect the NSA's multi-billion dollar investment.
Instinct, he said defiantly. It doesn't take a psychic to know this isn't any goddamn diagnostic.
Defiantly, Chartroukian strode over to the terminal and fired up Translator's complete array of system assessment software.
Your baby's in trouble, Commander, he grumbled. You don't trust instinct? I'll get you proof.
Chapter 20. La Clinique de Salud Publique was actually a converted elementary school and didn't much resemble a hospital at all. It was a long, one-story brick building with huge windows and a rusted swing set out back. Becker headed up the crumbling steps. Inside, it was dark and noisy. The waiting room was a line of folding metal chairs that ran the entire length of a long, narrow corridor. A cardboard sign on a sawhorse read, Oficina, with an arrow pointing down the hall. Becker walked the dimly lit corridor. It was like some sort of eerie set conjured up for a Hollywood horror flick. The air smelled of urine. The lights at the far end were blown out, and the last 40 or 50 feet revealed nothing but muted silhouettes. A bleeding woman, a young couple crying, a little girl praying. Becker reached the end of the darkened hall. The door to his left was slightly ajar, and he pushed it open. It was entirely empty except for an old, withered woman, naked on a cot, struggling with her bedpan.
Lovely, Becker groaned. He closed the door. Where the hell is the office?
Around a small dogleg in the hall, Becker heard voices. He followed the sound and arrived at a translucent glass door that sounded as if a brawl were going on behind it. Reluctantly, Becker pushed the door open. The office.
Mayhem. Just as he'd feared.
The line was about 10 people deep, everyone pushing and shouting. Spain was not known for its efficiency, and Becker knew he could be there all night waiting for discharge info on the Canadian. There was only one secretary behind the desk, and she was fending off disgruntled patients. Becker stood in the doorway a moment and pondered his options. There was a better way.
Con permiso,
an orderly shouted. A fast-rolling gurney sailed by. Becker spun out of the way and called after the orderly.
¿Dónde está el teléfono?
Without breaking stride, the man pointed to a set of double doors and disappeared around the corner. Becker walked over to the doors and pushed his way through. The room before him was enormous, an old gymnasium. The floor was a pale green and seemed to swim in and out of focus under the hum of the fluorescent lights. On the wall, a basketball hoop hung limply from its backboard. Scattered across the floor were a few dozen patients on low cots. In the far corner, just beneath a burned-out scoreboard, was an old payphone. Becker hoped it worked. As he strode across the floor, he fumbled in his pocket for a coin. He found 75 pesetas in cinco duros coins, change from the taxi, just enough for two local calls. He smiled politely to an exiting nurse and made his way to the phone. Scooping up the receiver, Becker dialed directory assistance. 30 seconds later, he had the number for the clinic's main office. Regardless of the country, it seemed there was one universal truth when it came to offices. Nobody could stand the sound of an unanswered phone. It didn't matter how many customers were waiting to be helped, the secretary would always drop what she was doing to pick up the phone. Becker punched the 6-digit exchange. In a moment, he'd have the clinic's office. There would undoubtedly be only one Canadian admitted today with a broken wrist and a concussion. His file would be easy to find. Becker knew the office would be hesitant to give out the man's name and discharge address to a total stranger, but he had a plan. The phone began to ring. Becker guessed 5 rings was all it would take. It took 19.
Clínica de Salud Pública,
barked the frantic secretary. Becker spoke in Spanish with a thick Franco-American accent.
This is David Becker. I'm with the Canadian Embassy. One of our citizens was treated by you today. I'd like his information such that the embassy can arrange to pay his fees.
Fine, the woman said. I'll send it to the embassy on Monday.
Actually, Becker pressed, it's important I get it immediately.
Impossible, the woman snapped. We're very busy.
Becker sounded as official as possible.
It is an urgent matter. The man had a broken wrist and a head injury. He was treated sometime this morning. His file should be right on top.
Becker thickened the accent in his Spanish, just clear enough to convey his needs, just confusing enough to be exasperating. People had a way of bending the rules when they were exasperated. Instead of bending the rules, however, the woman cursed self-important North Americans and slammed down the phone. Becker frowned and hung up. Strikeout. The thought of waiting hours in line didn't thrill him. The clock was ticking. The old Canadian could be anywhere by now. Maybe he had decided to go back to Canada. Maybe he would sell the ring. Becker didn't have hours to wait in line. With renewed determination, Becker snatched up the receiver and redialed. He pressed the phone to his ear and leaned back against the wall. It began to ring. Becker gazed out into the room. 1 ring. 2 rings. 3. A sudden surge of adrenaline coursed through his body. Becker wheeled and slammed the receiver back down into its cradle. Then he turned and stared back into the room in stunned silence. There, on a cot, directly in front of him, propped up on a pile of old pillows, lay an elderly man with a clean white cast on his right wrist. Chapter 21. The American on Tokugen Numataka's private line sounded anxious.
Mr. Numataka, I only have a moment.
Fine.
I trust you have both pass keys?
There will be a small delay, the American answered.
Unacceptable, Numataka hissed. You said I would have them by the end of today.
There is one loose end.
Is Tankaro dead?
Yes, the voice said. My man killed Mr. Tankaro, but he failed to get the passkey. Tankaro gave it away before he died to a tourist.
Outrageous! Numataka bellowed. Then how can you promise me exclusive...
Relax, the American soothed. You will have exclusive rights. That is my guarantee. As soon as the missing passkey is found, Digital Fortress will be yours.
But the passkey could be copied.
Anyone who has seen the key will be eliminated. There was a long silence. Finally, Numataka spoke.
Where is the key now?
All you need to know is that it will be found.
How can you be so certain?
Because I'm not the only one looking for it. American intelligence has caught wind of the missing key. For obvious reasons, they would like to prevent the release of Digital Fortress. They have sent a man to locate the key. His name is David Becker.
How do you know this?
That is irrelevant. Numataka paused.
And if Mr. Becker locates the key?
my man will take it from him.
And after that?
You needn't be concerned, the American said coldly. When Mr. Becker finds the key, he will be properly rewarded.